Hi, I'm Dr. Rona Novick, clinical psychologist and director of the Fania Gottesfeld-Heller Graduate Program in Jewish Education and Administration at the Azrieli Graduate School at Yeshiva University. I'm going to be talking today about forgiveness. Forgiveness in marriage. It happens to be that we're recording this on Rosh Chodesh Elul, so it seems particularly appropriate. But the truth is that in marriages, the time frame for forgiveness is endless. There isn't a particular date or window. And I hope that the comments that I make today will be helpful to those of you in marriages, considering marriages, or in relationships in your life with the people that love you and that you care about as well. Before we get into the meat of talking about forgiveness, a few caveats, a few points that I need to be clear that I'm not doing and that this doesn't relate to today. I'm only going to be talking about forgiveness today in the context of those relationships that matter to us, not about in geopolitical terms, and certainly not about abusive relationships where one is being terribly and personally, physically, or emotionally harmed. I'm talking about forgiveness in the context of relatively strong and healthy relationships, but even the healthiest of relationships has times when one or both partners make mistakes, indirectly or directly hurt each other, and the time for forgiveness comes. So what I want to do today is first talk about what forgiveness is and what forgiveness is not. So define what we're talking about. Then I want to consider how forgiveness actually helps us, both as individuals and helps our relationships. And then I want to explore some of the very specific steps that each of us can take to bring forgiveness into our lives and into our relationships. So first, what's forgiveness? One might say that forgiveness is really a brain act. It's a thinking act. It's a shift in our thinking. Because typically when we're hurt by someone, what's our reflex response? It's either to avoid that person who hurts us or to strike back. And forgiveness is a shift in thinking, a move from wanting to hurt someone who's hurt us to wanting to actually repair or renew a relationship, to do good to that person or that relationship. Forgiveness is an internal response to an internal perception. In other words, when we perceive that injustice has been done to us, whether it has or hasn't, whether intentional or not, and then we make an internal shift, an internal response saying, I'm going to forgive this person, that's forgiveness. It does acknowledge that wrong has been done to us. Forgiveness is not, and we'll talk more about this, it's not forgetting, but forgiveness is acknowledging that wrong was done and yet moving forward, finding a way to understand, accept, and move ahead, move towards, build bridges despite the hurt. Forgiveness is not the same as condoning or excusing negative actions. To forgive someone doesn't mean you like what they did, it doesn't mean you agree with what they did, and it in no means ratifies what they did. Forgiveness, by the way, is also not reconciliation. They're two separate things. They often go together, but not necessarily. We can forgive someone even if we are not going to reconcile with them. And believe it or not, there are times that reconciliation is forced. We see it all the time in the political world when parties agree to come together for expedience sake or to make things happen or work, coalitions are formed, even though there's been no real forgiveness. And as I said before, forgiveness is not the same as forgetting. Forgiving means that we don't forget the hurt that's been done to us. We acknowledge it, we reflect on it, and we decide what we want to do about it and how we want to think about it. The last thing I want to say forgiveness is not is justice. It's much easier to forgive someone who apologizes to you, who makes retribution, who takes responsibilities for their actions. But the fact is, you can pursue justice even if you don't forgive someone. And you can decide to forgive someone even when you feel justice has not been served. It's, again, hard to think about and talk about forgiveness, and in some ways, the other side of forgiveness is asking forgiveness and asking to be forgiven or doing tshuva or repenting. It's hard to talk about that on Rosh Chodesh Elul without thinking about Jewish concepts of what it takes to be forgiven. And in this way, we are somewhat different from the other major faiths and religions that believe that forgiveness is unilateral. It has only to do with the kindness of the hurt party. But in Jewish thought, we understand that true acts of repentance or tshuva or asking for forgiveness from God or for others involve admitting wrongdoing and making a conscious decision not to do it again. In our interpersonal relationships, I'd like to suggest that we have the power to decide how we feel and what we think, regardless of what the people around us do, regardless of whether they are ready to do tshuva or not. And so I'd like to talk about our power to be forgiving, and again, the benefits to us to be forgiving, regardless of whether we feel the people around us are worthy of that forgiveness or are acting in ways that from a Jewish or other perspective warrant the forgiveness. So why forgive? Let me tell you some really compelling reasons why you should become, starting this minute, a more forgiving person. First of all, let's start with our basic biology. The typical response to thinking, not only being hurt, but thinking about someone who has hurt you. The typical response to a wrong being done to you on a biological level is for your blood pressure to rise, your heart rate to increase, and your muscle tension to escalate. Your body responds directly when you focus on, think over and over again about hurt that you have received. It's not surprising that our bodies rev up in response to feeling hurt because our behavior usually takes two forms when we're hurt. One, we run away. We've been hurt. I'm going to go to a safe place. I'm going to remove myself from this person or relationship. The other thing we do is that we strike out. You hurt me, I'll hurt you back. Interestingly, you would think that those are protective acts, and on some level, if you were in serious danger, they are protective acts. But in interpersonal interactions, it turns out that when we are unforgiving people, we suffer, we inflict on ourselves all kinds of mental, physical, and relationship troubles. And when we turn towards a more forgiving stance, when we adopt a more forgiving way of thinking about the people in our lives and in our relationships, we actually have a chance at greater health. So there's kind of a paradox here. You think, I'm hurt, I'm going to either withdraw or strike out, but in fact, to protect myself, but in fact, the best way to protect yourself is actually to inculcate, to develop habits of forgiveness and means and methods of forgiveness. And by the way, in a typical marriage, no matter how good it is, no matter how great the communication is, in a typical family, parent to child, parent to aging parent, no matter how tight, cohesive, and wonderful the bonds are, they are bonds between human beings, and people will make mistakes and will do things that hurt each other. So having these skills of forgiveness are wonderfully important. Research on individuals who have a more forgiving stance or who have found a way to forgive someone who's harmed them in their lives shows that adopting forgiving stances allows us to lower our blood pressure, lower our rates of heart disease, decrease all stress-related health problems, and increase our immune system's function. Maybe the best way to fight the common cold is to be a little bit more forgiving. These stances boost everything our body does right, these forgiving stances, and lead to better physical health. Not surprisingly, an enormous amount of research has looked at what happens to people who hold grudges versus people who are forgiving in terms of their mental health and their mental well-being. Needless to say, it is not good for your mind and spirit to be an unforgiving person. If you can adopt a more forgiving attitude, you can look forward to fewer episodes of depression and brighter mood, higher self-esteem, greater happiness, a more hopeful stance, a more agreeable disposition, which makes a lot of sense, and people who are more forgiving are also rated as more empathic, better able to see the viewpoint of others, and we'll talk more about empathy in a little bit. Beyond your personal life, however, being a forgiving individual improves the relationships. It's better for the people around you. And so it shouldn't be surprising that people who are more forgiving have more friends, longer marriages, and closer relationships. So, all right, hopefully I've convinced you that it is a good thing to be forgiving. And perhaps you're thinking about instances where you've been wronged in your marriage or in the relationships in your family that matter to you. And you say, but I don't know where to start. I don't know how to let them go. So let's talk about how we can bring forgiveness into our marriages. What specifics can we do? One of the leading writers and researchers on forgiveness is Dr. Worthington, who has suffered his own tragic and traumatic loss in the murder of his mother. So his perspective on forgiveness is not simply academic. He's had some challenges in his life, very real and personal challenges in being a forgiving person. And he's developed what he calls the REACH process, that one has to reach for forgiveness. REACH is an acronym for the 5 steps he feels are critical. And the first one may seem counterintuitive. The R of REACH is recall the hurt. Now that's going to seem counterintuitive because I'm going to talk in a minute about recall, but not rumination. Rumination is when you obsessively and endlessly go over and over in your mind all of the reasons that you're angry and what horrible things your spouse, your partner, your mother, your child has done to you. What Worthington says, the task of recall is to recall in a relaxing way, not focusing on the hurt, but not pushing it away either, saying, okay, I've been hurt. My husband forgot my birthday. My wife belittled me regarding the size of my paycheck. My children didn't show me enough respect at the dinner table. I've been hurt, but not to obsessively ruminate, but to combine that recall with pictures, visions, memories of the positives as well. To say, okay, my husband forgot my birthday, but he's a really caring man, and he does wonderful things for me and for our children. Yes, my wife belittled my paycheck, but I know she very much appreciates my contributions to the family most of the time. She must be under a lot of stress. My children weren't respectful to me at the dinner table, but usually we have wonderful family times together. Aren't they just delicious most of the time? So recall the hurt, but don't escalate it, and combine it with relaxation and positive memories. The E of REACH is the empathy piece that I said I would talk more about. Empathize with the person who hurt you. Now, empathy, again, does not mean allowing them, saying, well, of course they did that, that's okay. It doesn't mean giving a free pass, but it means asking yourself, can I explain this hurtful act from the hurter's perspective? Can I put myself in that person's shoes, not to find the true cause, because we can never truly understand the motivation of another person, but can I at least find a plausible explanation? Maybe my husband forgot my birthday, my wife forgot my birthday because she's incredibly busy or very worried about the health of someone in the family. Maybe my wife belittled my paycheck because the financial stresses are getting to her, or a particular bill is coming due. Maybe the children acted disrespectfully because they were overtired from the evening before, and so they really needed more rest. These may not be the real explanations, but finding a plausible explanation and just the act of putting yourself in another's shoes can be really helpful. The A of reach, Worthington talks about as the altruistic gift of forgiveness. Now, to understand what he talks about in this altruistic gift of forgiveness, we each have to engage in a little exercise here. We have to think about a time that we felt guilty for hurting someone. Take a minute. Think of a time when you did something wrong and felt bad. If you're like most people, it ate at you. It bothered you. And if you were lucky enough that in that instance, you were given a gift from the person who you hurt, and they told you that it was okay, that all was forgiven, or they sent signals that it was done, it was past, it was over, and you needn't worry about what you had done, you can just, for a moment, again, appreciate that wonderful gift you were given and that feeling of relief that you got. Believe it or not, what Worthington says is that not only did you benefit in that moment, but the person giving the gift benefited as well. Think about the other gifts you give. I know I love shopping for small, inexpensive, but very personal things for gifts for people, and I get the greatest pleasure out of giving those gifts. I think almost as much pleasure as I get in receiving gifts myself. It's the same with forgiveness. Giving the gift of forgiveness gives the giver an incredible boost. And so Worthington says, from an altruistic point of view, help the other person, give the forgiveness as a gift, and in return, you'll be gifted. You will feel relief. You will get the benefits. And as we talked about before, physical, mental health, and relationship, you get benefits from forgiveness in all three areas. The C, Worthington says, requires your commitment to forgive. Forgiveness is an act of will. You have to make a decision. I am going to forgive this person. And Worthington says it's very easy to say you'll forgive and then renege. So that make the commitment, he argues, public. Say, I am going to forgive you tomorrow, or I'm going to forgive you for this. I promise I will forgive you. Sometimes I feel that's awkward and stilted. Make the commitment personally. Write it in your diary. Put it in your Palm Pilot Blueberry date book on your Facebook page. I'm going to forgive someone today. Make the commitment. Make it clear that this is something you plan on doing. If you don't feel ready to be forgiving in the moment, in the heat of the moment, then make a commitment to being forgiving someplace down the road. And the final H of reach, he says, Worthington, is holding on to forgiveness. Be prepared, he warns us, that memories of the hurt will surface and that it will be so easy to slam right back into unforgiving ways. Now, let me go beyond the reach and share some specific do's and don'ts if you want to be forgiving. I'm going to start with what not to do. Don't forget. Do not walk around saying, I'm just not going to think about what she did today. I'm not going to think about how he hurt me. Shoving things down and ignoring them, particularly filing them away so you can use them for ammunition later, is the opposite of a forgiving stance. To be long-suffering only to explode is not to be long-suffering or forgiving at all. It's not healthy for you, and it's not healthy for your relationship. Rather, if you don't feel you can be forgiving at the moment, if you are winding yourself up, thinking over and over about a hurt that's been done to you, use distraction. Do something else. Find something that engages your mind so that you do not focus on escalating images and feelings of hurt and betrayal. Not only do they hurt your relationship, but from a physical and psychological point of view, they do you no good as well. Do not think that forgiveness means condoning. Do not get stuck on the idea that I cannot forgive my spouse, my parent, or my child, because if I do, it means that I agree and accept what they did. There are many things that we have to forgive in life, even though we don't agree with what was done. Think again of the forgiveness that at times you've given others and how it felt better to you to not only be on the receiving end of that gift, but on the giving end. Don't feel, despite psychology and psychologists like me, penchant for saying, let it all out, talk about everything, do not feel the need to share every injustice, every hurt, to talk about every last problem and every angry feeling. Talking about anger actually makes us angrier. Now, we don't want to stuff it down, and we don't want to never talk about it. So what I do want you to do is make sure that when you are going to have discussions about hurt, about anger, about harm that's been done, have it at times when you are not irate, when you are not tired, starving, hungry, trapped in a car in traffic. Do it at times when you have an escape, when you have a safe place, when you can do it calmly and quietly. And when you are talking about things that have hurt you, when you are sharing angry feelings, talk about things that can change. It may be that your spouse's, stance, walk, gait bothers you. It may be that you don't particularly love an eyebrow or the way a nose flares. Those are involuntary things. Those are part of your partner. They cannot change them, and bringing them up is only source for hurt and pain. So talk about things that can change, and begin discussions and continue discussions in ways that invite solutions, not in ways that point the finger and say, why do you always do? You make me angry when you always. Take words like always and forever out of the conversation. Talk in the present and talk about solutions. I'd feel so much better if. Would it be possible for you? Could we maybe talk about how we handle? Those are ways that invite solving a problem rather than going over and over the problem. When you have these conversations, also consider the perspective of the other person. How are they going to feel hearing this? There's a wonderful story, and I won't get it exactly right, about a husband who's asked to bring home challah before Shabbos, a few minutes before the wife realizes he hasn't. And rather than berate him, rather than say anything, she puts two pieces of matzah on the table and proceeds with her Shabbos without ever saying a word of recrimination to him. Why? There was nothing he could do at that point. In my own life, I've had children, spouse, parents engage in behaviors, do things by mistake or on purpose that I know they feel terrible about, and that sharing my angry feelings would not at all make them feel better. From an empathic point of view, getting inside their skin for a moment and realizing they feel terrible already. There isn't anything I need to share now about my feelings. They understand that they made a mistake is important. The final don't hold on to the hurt. Resentment grows into bitterness. So even though I'm talking about not sharing every last little piece, find a way of letting things go. But also do be patient. Forgiveness isn't a quick fix. Do not watch this video and say, oh, Novik says be forgiving, I'm going to adopt a forgiving stance today, and my blood pressure will lower, my relationships will be better, and all will be right with the world. It is not easy to be forgiving, to stay forgiving, to hold on to it, and to see its changes in our lives. It takes time, it takes energy, it takes a great deal of patience and empathy and understanding for the people we care about. Forgiveness, Corrie Ten Boom reminds us, is an act of the will, and the will can function regardless of the temperature of the heart. If we decide to be forgiving people, we can do it, even when we are feeling hurt and angry. When we make the decision to bring forgiveness into our marriages and our relationships, we warm our hearts, we cement our connections, we make things better for ourselves, for the people around us, for those we love. Thank you.